Welcome to a Mother's Day edition of The Work. I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
And here's your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back for episode 19 of The Work. We are recording on the 8th of May. Yes, indeed. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Who knows when you'll be listening to this, so just enjoy it like a mother. I'm really excited because we have Mandy Moss and Michael Holmes in the studio with us today.
Hello.
They're so cute.
They are. Aww. You should stop the podcast right now for a second. Go to the website and look at the picture of them. They're just adorable.
Hear that kiss. It's adorable. Speaking of adorable, Ryan Basham, what's going on in the news?
Oh, it's an interesting week in the news given everything that's happened in the world. But let's dive right into some entertainment-y stuff. Variety reports that Crackle is taking a crack at scripted series. Sony Picture Entertainment's Crackle is getting into scripted long-form original series, looking to carve a space in the growing arena of digitally streamed original content alongside Netflix. The digital-only video network has begun signing established TV writers and producers, including the creators of CBS series Ghost Whisperer.
There you go.
So,
see, and this goes back to what we've been talking about pretty much all year, that we are going to see little bitty studioettes.
Mini studios.
Micro studios popping up. Studiolets I kind of like, but it doesn't work very well. But keep seeing these popping up and creating their own content and building their own little fiefdoms, you know? Mm-hmm. And so here there are these little groups of people who love working together and creating content for one another, and then they have their own distribution entity. You know, why let anybody else in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Crackle, if you want, went to that website a few years ago, you'd find a whole lot of super low-budget stuff. I mean, Sony was giving people like $500 to make a web series, and it was kind of crappy, but all of a sudden, they've taken a turn, and they're actually rolling out their first half-hour show later this year. So.
Well, you know, Mary Olson, the Diani and Divine series, that first pilot was shot for a Crackle contest that it didn't win.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that was from, it came in second, but it was great because then they didn't lose the rights to it, which is what allowed them to go, you know, to 10 million hits on YouTube.
Crackle's another one of those websites, though, where you can, they have programmed content, but they can also do user-uploaded content, too, which kind of dilutes the brand for me, but yay, Funny or Die. Moving on, Variety also reports that Netflix and YouTube are lining up original content. We know about Netflix, of course, but YouTube is reportedly planning to add up to 20 channels, in quotes, of original professionally produced content, filling between 5 and 10 hours per week. The Google-owned company is said to be planning to spend as much as $100 million on the initiative, which is not that much compared to what the studios and major networks spend, but it's enough to get content launched. So
I think it's huge, and we're just going to keep seeing more and more and more of this.
I don't know. It's just, where do you find the originally produced stuff on YouTube buried between Becky Cruel and...
Yeah, that was my question.
The cat on the piano and all that stuff.
Right. It's sort of like Bite Me, which is the web series that I cast because it had its own channel at YouTube, and it then became a featured show on YouTube and was pushed very clearly in front of the viewers and especially people who were watching videos of similar theme. So anybody who would watch anything with zombie, the first thing they would get in the suggested videos was not a user uploaded zombie web series. It was Bite Me, which was sponsored and branded content, by the way.
And I don't know. I feel like YouTube might be willing to take a bit more chance on edgier material than, say, Netflix or the studios would be necessarily. I don't know. That's
certainly
just the impression
possible.
That I get.
Yeah, I would think that would be the same.
Well, I imagine that would be true, seeing as Google owns YouTube, and Google is known for taking all kinds of chances.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, you know, entrepreneurial spirit and all that.
Those kids.
Yeah, those crazy
those
Google
kids. Kids and their internets.
Keith, you had some news about Netflix.
Actually, I did. I was surfing the news networks this week because, you know, my...
Porn.
Okay, porn.
Specialty sites. Specialty entertainment sites.
Specialty.
For the refined consumer.
I was surfing earlier this week on all of the news sites to... you know, reflect on the world news happenings that have been going on. And I came across this from CNN Money. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings is now becoming tentative about his company's growth. What he says is he is pleased with his company's massive growth, but he fears that getting too large will start an Armageddon with the cable networks. He talked about the fact that Netflix has a niche philosophy. They want to be not too small or not too big. He wants to do it Goldilocks style.
So did Starbucks.
Yeah.
Right.
And Walmart.
Exactly.
And the only thing that I get from reading this article is that some PR guy coached him with just about every cliche that you could throw in to say, we're about ready to stab everybody in the back. Please, nobody look at our knife hand.
Yeah. It's not just public facing spin either. That's to the, you know, their stockholders too. I mean, they you know, they're setting expectations low and trying to keep people off their guard.
Right.
So
that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to undercut expectations, keep everybody off their guard, and then they're going to wake up one day and
kill them all.
Oh, and Comcast's spine will be in Netflix hand with a big giant flawless victory.
Is that a Braveheart?
No, it's a
Mortal Kombat.
Flawless victory.
Do you think people really get that? It's like the guy from the football player on Dancing with the Stars. What's his name?
Oh, Hines Ward.
It's like how many people actually believe that he really just was in the wrong place at the wrong time and got handcuffed in front of a whole bunch of people?
Oh no, that was publicist designed. That was absolutely to get viewers and to get people excited about the show.
So many people know his name now that didn't before.
Like me.
Exactly.
Or me. Yeah.
Right. And you know, look at how it all transpired. The girlfriend the lady in the car.
Nice.
She could have been anybody.
Hang on. So,
Divine Brown.
Here, let's the woman driving the car, okay, first of all, I don't know what dude lets the girl drive the car.
Ouch.
Especially a football player.
Has reported it stolen.
Right.
The car gets pulled over, they get pulled out at gunpoint, they all get harassed by the cops. And eventually the cops believe her the story that she called the car in stolen, got the car back, and then didn't call the police to go, oh, I got my car back?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's how that works.
There's nobody on the planet at Hines Ward's publicity level where that happens to accidentally.
Yeah.
There are no accidents.
I'm with you on that.
That's PR spin. And sure. Look, it worked.
And We're talking
about him.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous how something, especially like Dancing with the Stars, how getting a little bit of a platform can go so far. I mean, the situation, Mike Sorrentino from Jersey Shore.
That, you know, his real name is terrifying.
Well, I've heard, I have to give his government name because I can't.
Government name?
Because I can't stand to just let him be known as the situation. But he has a scripted pilot deal with MTV.
That's terrifying.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
I judge you, MTV. No, I don't. That's empty. That's totally on brand for MTV.
Well, the M no longer stands for music. It stands for mediocrity.
Oh.
That's, you know, nice. That's a good one,
Michael. You know what? We all know that the stuff on MTV sucks, but they are still a cash cow.
For that's true. Yeah.
I don't know how. I don't know who's
Well, if you pander to the lowest common denominator, you're never going to be disappointed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mandy just said she doesn't know how MTV is so big. Well, all that means to me, Mandy, is you have never been to Mississippi.
No. I say that not out of an actual...
They don't have electricity in Mississippi.
They can't afford...
They've heard about TV.
Talking picture box.
We're sorry, Mississippi. We're going to get hate mail. Sorry, Mississippi.
Yeah, we're sorry. I lived in Florida for 8 years. Like, I understand how MTV is actually making all of that money. But on my own personal creative and philosophical level, I say, I don't understand.
Wait, didn't they make you check that at the border when you came into California? Because really, I don't know what you bring in these standards with you here.
Oh, that's funny.
Speaking of standards, let's go into our interview.
Do we have them anymore?
I would love to talk with you, Miss Mandy Moss.
Not you. I mean...
Yes. Mandy Moss, sitting next to you is the adorable Michael Holmes, and you can't stop touching him, which our listeners may not appreciate, but we really enjoy watching you fondle one another.
You should see over here, there's like 60% of this chair that Michael is supposed to be sitting in is like unused because half of his ass is over on Mandy's chair.
And he's blushing now. How adorable are you? And you guys have been together long enough that you really should be over this stage.
No.
How long have you been together?
A year and a half.
Yeah.
And how'd you meet?
We were dressed as David Bowie.
That's not how we met.
We do an ongoing sketch comedy show at a theater in Hollywood, the Sacred Fools Theater, and we were both sort of just hanging around a lot and got to talking, and then Destiny stepped in, and the rest is history.
Oh, barf.
Do you want to add anything to that?
I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah, we were doing the serial killer show a lot, and so hanging out. We do a lot of hanging out after the show.
She was playing an alien princess, and I was playing an Eastern European cowboy.
As you do.
His code name to my friends in that period, I referred to him as the cowboy.
Oh, and see, back in our day, 10 years ago, I referred to Keith as my secret internet lover.
Ooh.
See?
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't think he existed.
Do we want more details about her calling him the cowboy?
Well, that was his character.
No, but, okay.
Right.
No.
So let's, you mentioned Sacred Fools. I want to talk about Sacred Fools because as theater in Los Angeles goes, it's about as badass as theater can be. Like, I am so in love with Sacred Fools and what goes on there. So how did you get involved? How'd they pop on your radar as actor types?
Sure. Well, a friend of mine, Vanessa Perkins, who has gone on to have some great success with her show Louie and Keeley Live at the Sahara, which premiered at the Sacred Fools a few years ago. She and I did a production of A Clockwork Orange at a theater in Sherman Oaks about 8 years ago at this point, and shortly thereafter, she won some LA Weekly Awards for that. And the people at Sacred Fools were like, hey, why don't you just come and hang out and play with us? Because that's what you do. You just come to Sacred Fools and hang out, and bam, you're a success. Your actual mileage may vary.
I was going to say, take that to the bank, listeners.
And she kept trying to get me to come out, and I was like, no, I'm not ready to be awesome, I guess. So then, bam, it's 2007, and I decided I was going to audition for a show there, and the rest, I never left. I came to do a fake Christmas radio show. Now I'm on my second term as artistic director there.
So what does an artistic director do at a small theater in Los Angeles?
Well, we're responsible primarily for choosing...
And it's a committee.
It's a committee, yes. There's two other people, and we are primarily responsible for picking the shows that go in the season, and that includes our five main stage shows and any sort of ancillary programming that we're going to do, like late night shows. We do have the sketch show on Saturday nights, which is a fixture. We don't deal with money, which is good, because you don't want me dealing with money. And we always really strive to find edgy, funny, weird, just stuff that's going to grab people's attention. You know, if we felt like we could do like Our Town in a way that would grab people, we would do it. We haven't found that yet.
Yeah, I would say that'd be
people are still working on that one.
Yeah. So
what's your process for how do you get down to the few things you're considering? I mean, you get submissions and you
once a year in the early part of the year, our membership is allowed to propose shows, and then we go through a process where we meet with everybody who's sort of assigned to that production team, and then we pare it down to five shows, and then the secondary and tertiary programming we just kind of we fit it in as it comes to us. You know, I mean, we have a show coming up next month that we just kind of decided on the other day. So it's a fly by your seat, the senior pants kind of thing, and it's an adventure. It is at its purest sense an adventure, definitely.
Yeah. Mandy, you're also involved in theater, and you are over at Theater of Note most of your time.
I think it's probably at this point pretty evenly split.
Because another of my favorite places, by the way.
And I've been at Theater of Note since 2005 or 2006 officially is when I joined there, and then actually right around that time was when I first got called to do Serial Killer. I would get periodically every month or two I would get a call from some person at Sacred Fools. I had auditioned for like one show there. I don't even remember what the show was, like 2003 2004, and I guess my headshot was just on file, and this was at the beginning of Serial Killers, so when they would need people they would like look through the file, I guess, and call, and I just wasn't able to very often. And then one day I just was like, you know what, I actually can, and I did one, and then I did a couple other ones and said I would never do it again, because it was like, I was like, this is horrible, I'm just too stressful, I can't do it.
Well, and the thing you have to understand about the Serial Killer show is that it is put together on a Saturday afternoon and it goes up Saturday night at 11. So you work, you give up your whole Saturday for about 10 minutes worth of content, but it is one of the most satisfying things that I've ever done as an actor.
Do me a favor and take a step back and start from the beginning of what is exactly Serial Killers?
Oh, yes. Okay. Actually, the full title of the show is Serial Killers at Sacred Fools. It's been around, what, 6 years
now? Six or seven seasons now,
It's a short-form theater show, and it edges towards sketch comedy. The premise is five shows enter and three shows leave. So the audience votes on the three serials that they want to come back the next week and continue their story, whereas two get killed. So there's serial killers.
I get it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Occasionally there's ties and four come back, but that's very rare. Yeah. And we are next weekend, which is the 14th, I think, having our playoffs. So there's actually going to be eight pieces in an evening for the next 2 weeks.
And four are getting killed.
And are the same actors brought back when a show is asked to continue on?
Whenever possible.
And there's a limit, usually, of an actor only being able to be in two pieces, but for the playoffs, all bets are off. So there could potentially be someone who is in every single piece
And that person checks into rehab on Monday.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Exactly.
That's
insane.
I've been having stress dreams about it.
And so who writes these micro...
Janelle Riley.
Well, no, Janelle Riley is very prolific, yes. And she is part of the serial killers canon, I would say.
Uh-huh, yeah.
She's got two pieces coming in the playoffs.
Okay,
good. Patrick Duffy, who is the son of Patrick Duffy, and he's also our managing director and
a long-time fool. He's a brilliant writer.
He's a great writer. He writes a lot, and he was actually the producer up until 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of our membership writes, I've written a few, but we let anybody who has an idea submit, and if we can squeeze it in, then we'll definitely have them.
And how would somebody do that?
You can actually go to the Sacred Fools website, which is sacredfools.org, and click on the Serial Killers link, which is on the main page, and that'll take you to a subpage, and then there's instructions for submissions there.
All right, so let's jump away from theater for a little bit, because of course you chose to move to Los Angeles to pursue your dreams.
Yes.
LA's not so much a theater town, even though you can certainly find thriving theater communities here. What do you do that you're passionate about in terms of your acting career or your hyphenate career? Because I know you, Mandy, have some really exciting stuff coming up and already in the works and online that we could check out. I want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've started recently. We just aired our third episode of a hosted show weekly. Comes out on Wednesdays. It's called Zervived. Where you can find us at zervived.it, like Zervived It.
Smart.
Yeah. So it's me and Kit Williamson host this half an hour show. How to survive the zombie apocalypse,
which is on its way.
Yeah, it's totally coming.
May 21st, right?
Oh, that's a different.
Our first episode was about zombie Jesus. So
right.
Because we aired the week of Easter. So
that's right.
That's when we premiered.
Did you get any hate mail for that?
My mother turned it off. She did. She was offended. By zombie Jesus. So. I don't know if she watched the last episode that featured a zombie porn.
A gay zombie porn.
Yes. Hot.
Was it good porn?
I hadn't seen it. I saw the trailer, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, the trailer is very interesting.
Yeah. I'd be interested in seeing it. But,
so, Mandy, why zombies?
I'm more of a recent... found more of a recent interest in zombies, I guess. And I hooked into them in a way that... You know, vampires are cool and all, whatever, but there's something about zombies that you get a sociopolitical kind of commentary behind it. I think it's a much smarter kind of monster to be into. I think that the mythos is so varied depending on who's creating it. I think there's a lot more opportunity for interesting storylines that you can kind of fit things in that kind of are zombies or not really zombies or their own zombies or they're the rage virus, you know, whatever it is. I think there's a lot of nerdy science that can go into it that I like.
And what is your thought on Helen Mirren as a zombie?
The Helen Mirren, Billy Crystal project where they have grandpires or grombies?
Grombies. I think we need to see more. About grombies. It is interesting because usually, and there actually is a script that's being shopped around now that is kind of more of a day-to-day living with being a zombie kind of story. So I think, you know, it would be interesting to see their day-to-day old people zombie story. Although I have to say, as far as comedy goes, like vampires, they work better on a comedy level than I think on a dramatic level. So
I certainly
so
agree with that.
I think that that a comedy old, you know, When Harry Met Sally sequel for vampires is totally great. And Helen Mirren, the fact that Helen Mirren's in there, like,
isn't she badass?
Chowing down.
She'll do anything. I mean, she'll really do anything.
She's a goddess.
Yeah,
she's just a goddess.
So, how about you, Michael? What do you have going on that's not based over at the Sacred Fools?
I've actually had a really great year as a commercial actor. Knock on wood. Hopefully, that's going to continue. I actually very recently got rid of my day job to kind of put my shoulder more into the acting thing.
So exciting.
Well, I should say my 40 hours a week office job. I'm still, you know. I need a thrival job. We all do.
Everybody does.
You know, it's okay. I feel like I'm flying and falling at the same time, and it's kind of wonderful.
Falling gracefully.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
Like Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
So
yes.
What tips would you give for actors who are maybe in a position to make that tier jump and are maybe both terrified and excited by the idea of leaving behind that 40-hour desk job?
I would urge them to do it as soon as possible.
Why is that?
Because I feel like the longer you put it off, the more tentative you become about it, and the more potential there is to not do it at all.
Those golden handcuffs.
Yeah.
And
then
comfy.
You're just doing a 40-hour-a-week day job.
Right. And that's not why you're here.
Yeah. And I personally feel like I wasted a little too much time in my first few years in Los Angeles, and I'm kind of just now making up for it.
How long have you been here?
Almost 10 years, exactly.
Yeah.
I've been here about 10 years, too. We actually moved out within, like, 2 months of each other.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I had the same, you know.
We had to, so we could meet.
Ships passing in the night, and they met up later.
But, yeah, I have the same, like, I feel like... there was a lot of distraction, life distraction, and I think that, yeah, this past couple of years has been kind of finding the groove of this place.
Yeah, I mean, I think the past few years have taught me a lot about the immediacy of the industry and just sort of, you know, how it's not going to come to you 9 times out of 10. It's not going to come to you, and how you really need to go out there and do something about it. And you need a lot of time to focus on that. So if you don't have it, how are you ever going to get forward? You're not.
And do you think that actors and producers, writers, hyphenates of all kind, creatives, need to get to LA to sort of figure that out? Or can they start figuring that out and then get here and hit the ground running?
I think in 2011, you don't need to necessarily be in LA to get things going anymore. I think especially with some of the conversations we were just having about, you know, net-based content sort of proliferating like it is, I think you can be in some small town in Ohio and start working on projects and get some, you know, momentum built up around you. And then hopefully by the time you get to LA, people know who you are and want to talk to you and do stuff with you, you know?
But I wonder, I don't know how much actual working actor sustainability in other cities, how much that is out there necessarily. I think you can certainly have some level of success, and obviously every city is different, but I think that if you're actually really looking to work as an actor, LA is a place that's going to have more opportunities for you than anywhere else. Mm-hmm.
But now, and then how about, let's bring it back to the coupling issue. How do creative people sustain a healthy relationship with one another when there are all the strains of being creatives and all the stresses that puts on you even as an individual, much less as a couple? What are some tips for surviving that?
We spend, because we're especially lately, there's been a lot less kind of overlap time, and especially with rehearsals, because we both do a lot of theater, there's a lot of that kind of sucks up our time. So we really just try at all, whenever we've got the opportunity, to just spend that time together, and to just kind of, if it means not going out on Friday night, which we often don't do, because that may be the only night we get to hang out together, like, we take that time to spend together.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it actually helps to have someone in your life that understands what you're going through.
Absolutely.
Because they have, you know, coping mechanisms that they can share with you and hopefully know that when certain things don't go a certain way, not to take your reactions personally and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're both crazy, so that helps.
That does totally helps.
How do you keep it interesting?
I guess it just always is. I don't think we try necessarily to keep it interesting. I think we just both like doing so many of the same things that it just kind of always is fun for us. I don't know. We play video games together. We watch. we really do. Not the same video games even. We'll sit in the room and play separate video games together.
It's awesome. True.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's true, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, at least now our computers
face each other.
So we're facing each other, so we can kind of maintain some sort of eye contact while we're
picturing you, like, yes, and the other one's like, good job, honey.
We do, actually. We have the running commentary.
Oh, you leveled up? Oh my god, that's awesome.
Oh my god, my sim totally just reached the top of their career. Yeah.
Your Simsers, really?
Well, she is. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm a crazy.
That's old school.
Well, Sims 3 is pretty amazing.
Oh, okay.
But what are you, Michael?
There's a massively multiplayer game called City of Heroes. You create your own superhero and you run around this virtual city and you beat up the bad guys. And you can or can not do it with other people online if you prefer.
And which do you prefer?
Sometimes it's nice to, you know, be Batman and go solo. But, I don't know. I've had some interesting online interactions over the years.
I'll okay, so much. For everybody out there, what's your superhero's name?
Currently, I'm playing the Nexus Kid.
So now people are going to come find him.
Everybody on City of Heroes, go look up the Nexus Kid and have a chat.
Wow.
But actually, Ryan, to your point about what we do to keep it interesting, it's going to sound odd, but the fact that we do have these great swaths of time where we don't get to see each other that much helps. I hate to say it, but, you know, absence does make the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, we really value the time that we get together. We don't take it for granted. Even if it's, I'm just sitting and watching, you know, episodes of The Prisoner, like, it's really great. We'd sit and have a beer and, you know, pop on a DVD.
Do you really think you get bored with each other if you had the opportunity, though?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
Well, guys, I know that this is some of your quality time with one another, so thank you so much for sharing it with us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being with us here on The Work. We're going to toss things back over to Ryan Basham for some... Not really news.
Well, the Webby Awards have come in. Did you just kiss?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Actually, more correctly, he nuzzled her ear and then they kissed. It was disgusting.
Not really news.
I think it's adorable. Ryan's a hater.
He loves it.
I'm just lonely.
No, you're not.
That's true, I'm not. Stories on that later. We need to do a spinoff like Chelsea Lately did, like After Lately. We can do After.
Isn't that kind of what Keep Creating is?
Are you going to talk about my love life on Keep Creating?
I think I already did.
Whoa. I got to sense myself around you with a camera.
That's right. Like my mama always said, you got to live your life like everything you say is going to end up on the front page of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Happy Mother's Day.
Aww.
So not really news.
Yes, please.
The Webby Awards have come and gone. Woo! And...
I don't believe you.
Zach Galifianakis topped the sprawling 2011 Webby Awards, according to The Wrap, winning 4 awards, while Justin Bieber took the People's Voice Award for Best Comedy Video at the 15th annual competition. I didn't know they'd been doing the Webbies for 15 years.
Has the internet been around that long? I'm just kidding.
They give out a bajillion awards.
I gotta read that.
They give out a bajillion. It's like
who won the first ones?
We gotta look that up.
They have an award called Weird. They have viral award for viral video, an award for travel mobile on applications. It's weird.
So I guess 15 years ago, people were forwarding around something.
What? Yeah. So not really news for all sorts of reasons. Primarily that Zach Galifianakis and Justin Bieber. Oh, also Lisa Kudrow won an award. So good for her.
But with Zach and the Bieber action, it's a lot like last year's Streamies and everything else. And I'm wondering, where are the Streamies going? Because I know they separated from the Web Academy late last year, but they kept saying, we will do Streamies 2011. We will, we will, we will. Well, April's come and gone, and that's the month the Streamies have been historically. And where are they at?
I mean, who would invest in that? Who would buy advertising on something
after that last year?
And it's not like it was a fluke. I mean, they've not done a great job more than once now, so it's...
Well, that was only their second.
So, but the first one wasn't that well done either,
But the first one wasn't expected to be. I mean, yeah. You know, so they had low standards, and then they got all fancy. And
maybe they'll hire Dick Clark Productions.
Aww.
Poor Dick Clark. So that's it for Not Really News.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yes, wonderful. And I guess that's it for this Mother's Day edition of The Work.
Episode 19 has come and gone.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Ryan Basham. Our engineer, producer, and haysayer is Keith Johnson.
Hey.
Our special guests have been lovebirds Mandy Moss and Michael Holmes. And, of course, your host, Bonnie Gillespie.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Of course, you know we're at podcastingthework.com. We're on iTunes, where you can rate, subscribe, review. Thank you for all the wonderful feedback. And we're at Twitter, as the _work. Until next time, keep creating.